Hi, my name is Francis.
I'm Alice.
And welcome to this week's episode of Two Friends in a Pod, a place for friends to catch up on movies, music, TV, and everything pop culture.
Yep. So this week we are continuing the Christmas movie theme and going with Love Actually, which is a
2003.
Oh my goodness, I feel so old right now.
It's 18 years old.
Don't remind me. I was happy not to do the maths.
I've done the math.
Quick maths. So we're continuing the Christmas theme with Love Actually, which is 2003, a romantic comedy. First though, I want to discuss with you Selling Sunset because the third season just came out on Netflix and you just watched it. I have many thoughts. There was a lot of stuff happening. At the same time, not a lot happening in terms of drama.
Wait, let me check. It was season four.
Season four.
Yeah.
Wow, that passed by so quickly because I remember I only watched Selling Sunset, I think, last year, and I smashed the first three seasons really quickly because it's just so easy to watch. It's very mindless. It's very shallow, I want to say, but in a good way, that it was entertaining.
Yeah. Sounds so boring if you describe it because it's like a real estate agent.
Yeah.
Just people working at a real estate agent.
Yeah. We must preface it with a bunch of really good looking people working in a high end LA based real estate agent where they sell multi-million dollar homes.
That's true.
It sounds good.
Yeah. It's like millionaire celebrity clients.
Yeah. So whenever I try to sell this to people, I always try to sell it with the fact that the houses are absolutely beautiful. Like these are Hollywood, quintessential LA, multi-million dollar homes. Like they are gorgeous, like picture perfect, and they always show them when they're staged as well, so it's they're at their best, you know, and they describe it with such like exciting language.
They're like, look at this incredible view, there's a his and hers wardrobe, there's like a water feature, like I don't know, two kitchens, a walk-in pantry, there's a gym. Yeah. Like it's the dream home.
All dream homes though, which is a weird bit. And they're always like, oh, it's 10,000 square feet with an open floor plan and a view onto Hollywood with a swimming pool, with an infinity, whatever, and fully enclosed, very private, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and you buy into it. You're like, oh, that, yeah, I could see myself living in that home.
And I think this real estate agent is actually quite a successful one. And with the Selling Sunset series have become even more successful, you can imagine. So actually now that we're in season four, it's become even more lavish in a strange way. So basically when I finished season four, it somehow straight away played season one. And I was so taken aback because they were all wearing such normal clothes.
That's true.
Yeah. And it was just like this four like normal, I guess, not normal, but like, you know, four very good looking girls just sitting on a couch. And you think back on what you've just seen in season four. And there's more of them now, of course. And they're all wearing like really fabulous designer gear. Their hair is done up to the whatever. Their makeup is all fully done and everything. So it's just like you can tell with the more money they've gotten, not only from the cast, but also the production, I think, as well. So everyone has like full wardrobe changes like every single time that they enter the office. They're wearing like, you know, unattainable clothing, I would say, at this point.
Unattainable clothing, unattainable accessories. And yeah, in the beginning, it's like Chriselle just, you know, did a blowout on her hair. With her hair dryer at home, but now it looks like she full went to a stylist and got like an actual updo and a look.
Yeah, I'm like Christine. I think in season three or season four, when she met her billionaire boyfriend, it's just a big shift, I think, in the way that she looks because now she can afford the, I don't know, 1 meter long hair extensions and the platinum blonde hair and
designer everything.
But yeah, it's a very aesthetic show, and I think even people are aesthetic, but the homes are definitely sort of like half-half, I would say. Like half of it is the appeal of the homes. And then on the side, we've got some petty drama that always happens between the real estate agents, I guess. It does feel a bit more scripted this time in comparison to other seasons, I feel. Maybe because there's definitely like an agenda that there's definitely a storyline that they want to follow through, in which we've always painted Christine as the villain of the show. And then in this season, she is still the villain, very pregnant villain. And we just always get these cutscenes of everyone against Christine. I think that's the main storyline.
Yeah. And I think they like start out hinting, oh, you know, Christine doesn't like one of the girls because she's friends with someone who like dated her boyfriend and there's like a little bit of drama there. And oh my God, what a surprise. Emma, who she hates, is like the new worker at the real estate firm. Like, wow, what a surprise. Can you imagine? She's the one.
And the way that she brings it up is so funny. It's in the beginning of the season. She's just like, oh, by the way, I really hate Mary because she's friends with this girl that I really hate. It happened 2 years ago, but I'm bringing it up now very naturally.
Like, just by the way, I hate her. And then like the next scene is Jason or Brett or one of the twins who I can't tell apart going up to Emma and be like, do you want to work with us? And it's like, ooh.
Drama, of course. Like, so that's some of the drama, in which there are two sides to every story, as you know. But Christine's is again very different to the one that's being told with the rest of the group. I think a lot of that drama is stemming from them, from that perspective. And also we have an introduction of Vanessa.
Vanessa, yeah.
Yeah. So she's from, I think she...
Mexico? Well, she did soap operas in Mexico, they said.
Just pretty freaking cool, I have to say. But she... Yeah, she's from like Miami or Malibu. Like, she takes care of that sort of region. So that's what I brought her in to kind of, they want to expand. But she kind of comes in as this like trying to be a voice of reason. I feel so bad for her because she's trying her damn hardest to love Christine. And she like, you know, I think some of it, it's Christine trying to have that redemption. You know, she has been seen as a bully, not just on the show, but sort of outside the show as well. Like, we get that from Chriselle. Yeah. Like, she's been telling stories to the media and stuff, like, even outside of this thing that they're filming.
Yeah, and even stories about, like, she's also been telling stories about Heather and Heather's partner. So, yeah. Like, outside of the show itself, there's been a bit of discord among the cast members.
So it's a little bit them trying to be like, stop it. And then Christine is trying to, of course, redeem herself. I don't know if it's successful or not. You'll have to tell me when you finish watching the season whether you think she's succeeded in becoming a better person. But I think not. It's really hard. It's really hard because you feel, I think we see very genuine moments from her. And that's where you're like, oh, she's a person, of course. And she has her own issues and things that she needs to deal with, but I think she really projects that onto the other people, the stuff that she holds inside, because she's trying to maintain this like image. It comes out in like the worst ways, I think. So I sort of like feel for her, but also at the same time I'm like, just give it up, like.
Yeah, she definitely gives me the sense that she can't cop it, or like she has very little self-awareness. So when issues do arise, she kind of like immediately finds a way to pin it on the other person. But even if they have something to do with it, she doesn't maintain any guilt for herself. Like, she doesn't like see, oh, but maybe because of this, I could have contributed to that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I think that's probably part of the reason. But I think this season four, we have seen, I think we do see a different side to her. We see peaks of her being like, absolutely genuine, genuinely more human, and not just like a one-dimensional villain character that we see often in reality TV shows. So in that respect, it is really interesting to see them trying to like paint that picture. But I don't think it ever gets to her. Like, I don't believe that there will be a change, to be quite honest, because I think there's just so many barriers for her to overcome. Like, I think it's something that we, or maybe she needs to look at herself because she's obviously trying to portray a character on TV. Also, I don't know. It's kind of hard to tell like what to pinpoint her towards. Yeah, because I don't think she ever achieves full redemption. But we do see her as being more dimensional as a character in this particular show. So yeah, there's a lot of interesting things happening with this particular season. And then we do get a little sneak peek into the next season. And I'm so freaking excited. Like, I think we've seen some of the stuff that's kind of come out even before the season. So we all know that Chriselle is now dating one of the twins.
One of them. Jason or Brett, one of the Oppenheims.
One of them. Anyway, so next season they're kind of hinting that relationship blossoms then.
Because they're already hinting at like, oh, Chriselle being the new favorite, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Wonder why she's a new favorite.
Also dated like Mary before, and there was this whole thing in the first season about Mary's the favorite, blah, blah. She gets all the nice listings, et cetera, et cetera. And actually, yeah, some of the highlights from this season so far has been one, Christine wearing the chair bag, which I think both of us lost our minds at, because there's this like crazily expensive bag, alleged bag, but it's really just a diamante encrusted chair on a chain.
It has no pockets.
Nothing. You can't do anything with it. You can't even sit on it.
Yes, she does wear it to a listing.
Yeah. So we were both like, who would buy that? And obviously Christine. The return of Davina, who I hated.
Oh, yes.
And I still don't like.
Still don't like her, but appreciate her more. Yeah, obviously, that's coming from a place where I really didn't appreciate her. And so much of it is just like all the girls in the office were like, I want Davina, she's going to be so negative, and then bring her back anyway. And then I feel bad for her because she is genuinely trying to turn around her image. Christine won't let her. I felt bad for her, but also I still don't really vibe with her as much as the other girls.
And then my other favorite moment, Mary and one of the brothers host a dog's birthday party for their two dogs, which they share custody of. And this dog party, which should be a lovely, positive experience, is like literally dogs running around everywhere. Like, what more could you ask for? It turns into the most like toxic, like petty breakdown in like friendships and communication and yelling and I love it. I was just like, this is so stupid. You're at a dog's birthday party. And like one of the brothers literally read out two poems dedicated to his dog. Yeah. Just be happy.
They were really sweet poems, I have to say.
They were so sweet.
I think a lot of the drama, again, stems from Christine. Mary really didn't want her there. And then Mason, I think, invited her.
To be honest, yeah, like I think Mary made a good point. I think she might have. I mean, she was really mad and maybe that wasn't the best way to express it. But like it was a joint party. It was like a personal thing, not a work thing. And if the person you're hosting with invited someone that you weren't cool with and didn't tell you, I feel like you'd be like, excuse me.
I mean, you say it's not a work thing, but I mean, they're being filmed. So
they're literally being filmed.
But it's kind of a work thing in a way, weirdly enough. I mean, you know, like stuff like that is probably like scripted in.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Her reaction is not scripted in. I mean, that felt very genuine. She went completely, she was so mad. A lot of it is, I think, Mary, who's seen as quite like a sweet girl.
Yeah.
She's just given up on Christine, I think. I do feel like at the same time, it is just Chriselle, her and Heather just like instantly talking about Christine as well. I'm like, do you not have other things to talk about? Like,
yes. It's literally every conversation between like the three or four of them starts off like, hey, how are you doing, girls? Loving life. Mm. Everything's great. Did you hear about Christine? Are you in touch with Christine? Remember when Christine did this? And then they always talk about, oh, I'm so sad. I don't want to talk about this. I want to move on. Mm. I don't want to deal with this anymore. And it's fine. Mm. And then the next conversation is like, but remember when Christine did this? And I'm like, just stop talking about it. Like, why do you keep bringing it up? For TV, obviously.
Of course, just for us. But yeah, I think it does get tiring in a way because like, I don't want to hear about Christine anymore.
Yeah, and to be honest, Christine does the same thing where when she's talking to like the other girls, she'll bring up Chriselle or something that happened or Emma, and it's like, maybe you guys should talk about
it. No, I think it would be nice to have seen a different side to them, like them enjoying life outside of Christine or something, because they genuinely do seem to be friends. Yeah, I think it does get tiring because it does seem like they are just ganging up on Christine as well. And I don't think that looks good for them either. Yeah, just anyway, being kind of like petty drama.
Super petty.
Super petty.
Hot girls, dressed really great, amazing houses, super petty drama is the show.
So shallow. Watch it for the houses.
Yeah, if we ever get a house in LA, can we go to the Oppenheim group?
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
I don't foresee that in the near future, to be honest.
One of the long-term goals.
There were a lot more celebrity appearances this season as well. So one of them I did show you because I was very excited to see Simu Liu, our favorite Shang-Chi, appear on Selling Sunset. And it was like, our worlds are colliding, you know, our trashy reality TV show colliding with our favorite Marvel superhero, favorite at the moment, of course. It's just like, you know, things happening.
Yeah.
And then Chriselle is just so like over the top when she deals with him. She's just like, oh my God, you're so humble. I would never know you're a celebrity. I'm like, girl, relax.
And then like someone else, like one of the brothers starts talking to him and she's like, oh, it's my client. Like, let me just talk to him.
That's fair too, I think.
He's just like chill. So it's like, relax, just talk to the house.
Yes.
He wants a basketball court in his house.
He loves basketball, of course.
But he's like, you know, family's really important to me. So I need extra bedrooms. I'm like, I love that for you.
Yeah, happy for his success. And she did point out to him, think of all the sequels you're going to be doing and future Marvel movies. I feel like if he can afford this now, surely he can afford a little bit more just to get the house of his dreams.
Yes, I think so. I would 100% recommend it. It's so easy to watch.
So dumb.
It's so dumb, but it's entertaining for sure. And you'll at least enjoy looking at the houses and the clothes and the fashion. Yeah.
Because there's enough of both that you don't get tired of either.
100%. I keep it coming. I love it. More Selling Sunset.
Give me season.
Give me seasons 5 to 10, please.
I was just saying, how do we transition that? I have no clue.
Let's talk about Love Actually now. Smooth.
Love Actually. So actually, it doesn't sound like a Christmas movie, but it is very much a Christmas movie. It's centered around the theme of love, around specifically Christmas time. And that's what is tying everything together, I think. It's a certain moment in time where different types of, it's a celebration of love, I think, is kind of what it's meant to be. You know, all types, you know, good and bad. Anyway, this movie came out in 2003, so we were very much children when this came out. I want to talk about the first time I watched it because I think it's kind of funny in retrospect.
Okay.
So, so in primary school, we did rent this movie at Blockbuster, you know, the Danish spiel. We did not realize that this, you know, and this movie had contained like any nudity or anything of sexual nature. And we were just like, why are we watching this?
I can imagine.
Yeah. I mean, we were thinking like year five or something. I don't know. I think we're just very innocent. We're just like, oh my God, we shouldn't be watching this. Because we're watching it without an adult as well. We're just like, this is a lot. Because it's quite overt as well.
It's like a lot of nudity and like actual. Yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah. It's a lot, I think, especially if you're not expecting it. And it's quite also jarring. Not jarring, but it's quite sudden. But actually watching it as an adult, this is actually one of my favorite storylines.
Oh my God. Okay, yeah.
Spoiler alert. But anyway, that was my first viewing of Love Actually. Like nothing of the movie comes to mind except that particular reaction where I was like, this is a lot. I wasn't expecting this. And I'm very shocked right now.
What if my mom walks in?
Yeah.
Did you like it? Or did you have to rewatch it again when you're a bit older? Like maybe in high school and then you liked it? Because like this is a very popular but also divisive movie.
Yes, I can see why it can be divisive, especially in watching it now. Yeah, I think I must have rewatched it at some point in high school and been like, oh, this is just like almost nostalgic, like even though I don't remember liking it the first time, I think it's just one of those ones that kind of just like stuck with me year after year. And you just kind of like, because the themes of it are very much centered around like the classic Christmas things, like not just romantic love, but like family love, friendship, that sort of thing.
Mm.
I think a lot of it is sort of encapsulated in the end where, I mean, sorry, just skip ahead, but in the end where they all kind of combine all the stories together.
Yeah.
I think that's sort of like the thing I take away from it rather than the individual storylines.
Yeah. I think I watched it a bit later than most people. And I think all I had heard about was like, oh, it's a really cute love story. It's really cute Christmas rom-com. So then when I watched it, I think I didn't like it because a lot of the stories aren't really that cute.
Yeah. I think, yeah, cute is not the right way to say it because I would say not all the stories are good.
Yeah. There's like bad stories in there as well.
Some of them are quite sad. I think they're quite real as well in some respect. To say it's cute is wrong. It's not a cute rom-com. It is.
Yeah.
It's trying to portray just, again, different ways of loving, of love. And it's not all romantic. Some of it is familial. Some of it is about loss as well. It's not completely accurate to call it
cute.
Romantic comedy or cute, even though there are definitely those aspects to it. It is an all-encompassing movie, is probably what it tries to achieve. And it's quite ambitious, I would say.
Yeah, so it juggles like 10 storylines, essentially. And I think probably props to this movie, one thing it does well is like bring all these stories and cut, like intersperse them and kind of like ultimately bring them together. So I think you can like follow along with all the stories, which I know, which I feel like must have been tricky given the number of characters and everything. So I think it does that well. And I think maybe in terms of it being 2003 movie, there's a lot of stuff that like annoys me about it, like the character, how they act and stuff, which we might get into, that make me not like this movie that much.
Yeah,
it's like definitely, a lot of them annoy me.
Definitely there are some storylines that we would definitely take away. And also language, I think it's a product of its time, realistically. It's 2003 portrayal of love. Let's be real. A lot of movies around this time probably weren't the best. Sometimes we have to look at it from that sort of point of view rather than, you know, a now point of view. But also, you know, realizing its flaws and stuff doesn't make it. It can make it difficult to watch. I can definitely understand that.
But it's definitely a very popular movie, and it's always something that comes back every year. It's a very it's something people watch every Christmas and enjoy. So there must be something about it that like keeps people coming back for more.
I think it is just the package.
It's a package deal.
It's a package deal, right? Like some storylines definitely I would take away, but all together at the end when they tie it all together, that feeling, or I guess the thought behind why this movie exists, I think still rings true. Like it's basically that end scene, the airport where everyone comes and hugs, you know, people connecting at Heathrow Airport. I think that idea of love is like a very romantic and idealized version of it, which is that we want that scene.
yeah, I do feel like that input, it sort of bookends the movie. It both starts with scenes at like Heathrow Airport and, you know, people like hugging and being really glad to see each other. So I do feel like especially the intro hits different given COVID and all the people who, because we had similar scenes again when the borders finally opened and all the reporters went to the airport to see family reunion. So I feel like so many references to Love Actually and this being like real life now. So it does maybe ring true a bit more when people watch it this year.
Yeah. And to its credit, I also think Love Actually, which started this whole trend of like Valentine's Day and New Year's Eve and stuff like that, which have all kind of failed where Love Actually succeeded in creating a balanced story. So, you know, is Love Actually, has it aged well? No. Is it successful in what it's trying to achieve? I would say probably yes.
Yeah. It's strange that the other movies haven't received that same sort of popularity.
Have you watched any of them?
I think I've watched the New Year's one. Yeah. And for the Valentine's Day one, I've only watched the Taylor Swift scenes.
The Taylor and Taylor scenes?
Taylor ones, yeah.
Yeah.
Have you watched them?
I think I've watched both of them, and I think both of them lack the, I don't know, genuine intent behind them. I think they just seem very forced and shallow, whereas I think for all Love Actually's flaws, every story is sort of, you know, anchored by intent, I think. Like all the actors are genuinely being in their roles, and it's just all sort of being tied together by this thread of like, this is a type of love, even if it's not love that we all agree is good, it is a love, you know, ones that we can all sort of understand from some sort of perspective, whether you've gone through it, or you know someone who's gone through it, or you've just heard of these stories. There is like something in here for everyone, I think, that we can all either relate to or empathize with.
Yeah. And I think worth saying that the actors, like, it's an amazing stacked cast. It's an absolutely stellar cast. So that's another reason why I think it does really well, or it did really well and continues to do so. The amazing cast who bring their A game, and they're really funny and they're charming and they're charismatic. Mm-hmm. So I think that's another reason.
I mean, this is why we need like actual movie stars in movies, even as
not Taylor Swift.
even in movies as fickle as Christmas movies and rom-coms and stuff, which you all kind of get pushed aside as genres, we do need people who are like good actors, because you know what makes a good movie? Good actors. People who believe in the script. Like, we have some really good names in here. Like, we have Keira Knightley, Alan Rickman, Emma Thompson. We've also got Martin Hugh Grant. Yeah. Come on. Liam Neeson.
Neeson. Colin Firth. Yeah.
It's like, like name after name after name. Like, there are so many good, solid actors in this.
Maybe if we start, so I've like listed the stories here, because we felt like it would be hard to go through chronologically, given that it's like a very, I don't know, it goes from story to storyline.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the first one I've written is Billy Mack and his manager, Joe.
This is one that I have.
Oh, wait. And after every story, we should say, do we like it or don't like it? Is it Love Actually? Is it Love Actually?
Is it Love Actually?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. This one, I think over the years, my understanding of this story has changed a bit. I appreciate this character so much more now as an adult than I ever did as a child. I think his just whole like, screw you guys, I'm going to do this, I'm old and I want to make money mentality totally rings with me now.
So basically, he's like a rock star whose time is, his shine is kind of worn off.
He's an aged rock star, let's be real. He's like in his 60s, 70s. He's probably, you know, he was very popular 40 years ago or something like that. And he's basically re-released a Christmas song kind of as a money grab, I would say.
Yeah, they describe it as like solid gold shit that's going to just bring them the money. And they keep saying the song's bad, but I was like, it doesn't sound that bad to me. Like, I don't mind it.
Yeah, I mean, it's So the rendition he does is, it's not far off the original, I would say. I think he changes a few lyrics. It's meant to be like love is all around, but actually he changes it to Christmas is all around, and that's basically the the only thing he changes. Yeah, like, is it a solid song? Like, yeah, is it a half-assed attempt? 100%. But I totally appreciate that.
Yeah.
To be honest.
His story is that this song somehow goes to number one on the charts. Mm-hmm. And then he, I don't know, gets really popular. So suddenly Elton John is like, hey, come to my Christmas party. You're a number one artist. And then he goes to the party. But then he realizes actually he doesn't want fame and fortune, popular people. He just wants to hang out with his manager, Joe, who's been there with him along the way by his side. Just supporting him and his money-making endeavors.
Yes, like, which I totally, again, appreciate and understand. If I could do the same, I would totally do the same. So I think a part of it is that it's actually quite a comedic storyline in that he openly says it's a shit song on radio. He is very blasé about what it is. He's very upfront about his intentions as well. And I think a lot of people in the public just find that endearing, and they're just like, yeah, okay, let's give the old man some money. You know, I think he on national TV was like, I will go bare naked or something like that if this goes to number one. Like, he makes some ludicrous claim or I don't know. And then I think people just like, yeah, let's do that. Like, just for the fun of it, I think.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, propels him into like stardom or, yeah, that number one spot, which I think is quite funny. But yeah, like, I think when I had initially watched it, my reading of that relationship with his manager was one of romantic love. But actually, when I look at it, oh, shit, that's a cockroach. What? Oh my God, there's a cockroach.
Wait, where is it?
Oh my God, there's a wall.
Oh no. Oh my God. Do you have spray? Should I keep this in the pod? You're so brave.
I have no choice but to be brave. Yeah.
Is it on the floor now?
It's on the floor.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay.
Can you give me a second? I'm gonna.
Yeah. No. Take the time.
A few moments later.
I'm back.
Oh my God, this is scary.
It's so scary.
What'd you do with it?
Oh, I picked up with tissues and then flushed it down the toilet.
Oh yes, R.I.P. It's gone. It can't hurt you now.
It's hurting me in my memories.
Anyway.
Romantic? Between Billy and his manager?
Okay. The first few times I had watched it, or when I was growing up and watching it, my understanding of the relationship was quite romantic. But actually now that I think about it, I think it's just like love in friendship. Like, they just genuinely love each other, like with a pure heart, not necessarily romantic. It could be, but it doesn't have to mean that. I think I was just very much like, this is romantic. Like, but I don't think it's quite like that linear to me in this particular storyline.
Yeah, I think, to me it reads like more friendship and Billy learning that it's like the people who are around him who've always supported him that are important, not just like the new hangers on like Elton John who want to be with him now that he's popular. So to me, I would say this is Love Actually. Yes,
it is Love Actually.
We're off to a good start.
Story number two.
Yeah. The second one I have is Jamie in Aurelia. So this is Jamie, played by Colin Firth, who sadly his girlfriend cheats on him with his own brother. So he's cucked by his own brother. Very sad. And as you all do in this situation, he runs off to the French countryside to write a novel on his typewriter.
Very romantic.
Yes.
Very romantic.
And then just so happens to get a housekeeper who is Aurelia. Aurelia?
Aurelia,
yes. Mm-hmm. Hired to clean his house. And I guess the thing with this situation is she only speaks Portuguese and he only speaks English.
Mm-hmm. So they do a lot of communication through like actions or like just general body language.
Mm.
And I guess the comedy in this is that she will say something in her in Portuguese and he'll answer back in English. And what they're saying are like completely conflicting things. Like, she'll be like, what kind of idiot only doesn't make a copy of his book or something like that. And then he's like, you know, it's not that important. It's not very good either, anyway. You know, like things like that. Where it's like, it's funny as a viewer more than funny for the people in the storyline.
Yeah, so they're basically just trying to communicate as best they can. But essentially, I feel like the way the movie portrays it, the moment that he kind of feels anything for her is when he's like sitting at by the lake with his typewriter, typing up his book, and it's all loose pages, and then the wind blows. And oh no, all the pages like blow into the water or the pond. And she, and the camera films this very sensually. She like starts taking off her clothes and the camera's like panning over her body, and she has a tramp stamp tattoo. She dives into the pond to try and save his book, and he's like, oh, she's hot. And then it's like, oh, I guess he likes her.
I think to me, the attraction was not necessarily the body. Like, obviously, like that plays a part in it. But the fact that she just does it without a second thought, she just like, oh my God, like this, I need to save this book or something. And she just does it like so like freely, like and confidently. She doesn't like hesitate to be like freak out or anything. She's just like, I'm just going to do it, jump into this freezing lake and just go for it. I think that is also part, to me, also part of the appeal. I think it's also one of cross-cultural attraction as well as familial attraction. So I guess the more you spend time with someone, the more you get to see of them and know them, even if they don't speak the same language, I guess. To me, that's sort of coming into this. But it does feel, I guess, I can see why people think it's quite shallow as well, because they're not talking to each other. They don't actually know each other. Like, you know, she was basically his servant or housemaid or whatever.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Making him tea, cleaning up after him.
Yeah.
He basically just like dropped her off every day. But I think it's like in those little interactions. That's how I'm choosing to say it anyway.
Yeah.
That I think that this relationship blossoms.
And then it ends up with him. He has to go back to the UK and she's just like living in France, I guess. But they both decide to learn each other's respective language on their own. Like he's just compelled to learn Portuguese, and it's this crazy scene where he's in a warehouse with like a million other students with headphones on, which is I guess how people learn language before Duolingo was around
or the internet. Yeah,
the internet was around. Yeah, I guess it's showing that their connection was so strong that he felt compelled to learn a whole new language.
Yeah, yeah, and he does actually travel back to her father's restaurant to try and win her over, I guess.
Yeah,
I think that's pretty much it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really that. And but he like they like don't talk. They barely communicate. They go back. He goes back home. He learns a language. He comes back and he's like, I want to marry her.
Again, attraction in the little things. But also, I think it is. It's probably naive to say there's no physical attraction, because it definitely is there. But I think it's in the little things. But again, as we see, they don't know each other to like the full extent. It's hard when you can't speak those languages, but I think that the effort that they go to make that happen is I mean, that's pretty admirable in my opinion.
I don't think they should be getting married though.
Oh yeah, no, that's a bit much.
Would you say this is Love Actually?
I would say it's Love Actually. Is it forever Love Actually? I don't know, we'll see. But for what it is at this point in time, where they just like, you know, have just learned a whole new language just to learn more and be with each other, I would say, what else could it be but attraction?
Yeah, okay. I see it as maybe 3 months of love actually, and then they get divorced or break up. Yeah, but in the end, she got a whole new language out of it, so not bad.
Well, yeah, but is it, you know, even if it's love actually for 3 months, I still think that's not bad.
Fair enough. Very generous reading.
It's a very, very generous reading.
Yeah. Okay, next story. This is Daniel, Sam, Joanna, and Carol. So this is Daniel, who is played by Taken guy.
Liam Neeson.
Yes, yes. And his stepkid, Sam, who is baby Georgian from Game of Thrones.
And other various action films. But to me, he's forever this little boy in Love Actually.
He looks so baby in here.
He's a baby in this one. So the story is his wife has just died. I think we are shown the funeral. He's very worried about his son and how he's taking it. And then we find out actually his son's okay with his mother's death. He's sort of accepted it. It's his own unrequited love that is actually bringing him down. And it is so, so sweet because he is, again, a baby. And I guess it's the interaction between him and his dad. His dad's like, oh, thank God it's just love. And he's like, what do you mean? The most heartbreaking, like heart-wrenching thing that could ever happen to you. Puts his dad in his place, basically.
Yeah.
His little baby. And then it's sort of like a quest for him to come to terms with love, try to get, not get the girl, but in a way, yes, get the girl, or at least try to.
Yeah.
Yeah, get the girl or die trying kind of thing.
They have an interesting dynamic because Sammy's like his stepson. So they talk a bit more openly, like he calls him Daniel. And yeah, so basically Sam was like, oh, there's this girl in school. She's the coolest girl, but she doesn't even know my name. He like literally says that she's heaven. So he's a very dramatic kid.
But this is love. This is not just a little crush.
He's like, I'm in love with her.
Yeah. I mean, it is a sweet, pure love. And then I guess from like Neeson's perspective, he is trying to also father this child that, and also is in mourning because he's lost his wife.
Mm.
There's like a running joke that he, like she wanted him to find a new person, or I think she mentions Claudia Schiffer by name, which is like a supermodel. You know, it's like little things like that. I think like part of the appeal of Love Actually is, as well, is just like the dialogue that comes into it as well. Like it's quite witty. It's funny in bits. I think that kind of keeps the story going as well. But Liam Neeson's character is very much like him trying to like straddle two roles in his life, right? Like him like trying to be a stepfather, but him also just trying to be, you know, to move on with his life in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. The central problem in this story is that the coolest girl in school is going back to America. I guess, you know, for Sam, this is his time to shine. He has to do something about it. And the reason why this annoys me is because the eventual solution that they come to together with his dad is that girls love musicians. If Sam plays in a band, she'll fall in love with me. They only have a couple of weeks until she's leaving, and then that's the solution they come up with. So he has to spend all his time learning how to play the drums. And I just really wanted the dad to be like, hey, just tell her how you feel.
Well, like, I don't know.
How would you waste your time learning the drums?
And the drums is, as we know, one of the worst instruments to be bad at.
Yeah.
if you're good at it, it's awesome, but no one starts off good. So it's a very noisy instrument. Yeah, I mean, there's that as well. Like he should have potentially been a bit more upfront with him, but I think he was also trying to like appease him and like, you know, just encourage him to do what he wanted to do. This little 8-year-old whatever boy, he wanted to do this. So I'm like, yeah, okay, let's do that. I will support you. So he does like end up playing the drums at the Christmas concert, and he thinks that Joanna's going to notice him. And she's seeing that All I Want for Christmas Is You, which you all love, is a very classic Christmas song. And then when she does the All I Want for Christmas Is You, she points at Sam, but then she also points at various other members of the audience. So he's like, oh, I'm not special, and he feels bad. And it's here where the dad sort of encourages him, like, no, you just got to keep trying. I don't know. I'm not really sure. I think it's just at some point just being like, yeah, do what you want, because clearly this is what he wants to do. And then we get one of the most, I guess, cliche storylines in rom-com history, which is the running through the airport. But we are getting this little child running through the airport as fast as he can, dodging security and everything. Of course, this is a bit weird to see in this is post 2001. So
this is very specifically post 9/11, because there's a very explicit mention of that in the intro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they like mention the Twin Towers falling and people calling their loved ones being like, I'm dying.
Yes, I agree.
Yes.
But this scene would not work in a post 2001.
Do you know what I wrote in my notes? Because this little kid legs it and like evades security guards and they're chasing after him. And I wrote, this is white privilege. Because if he was a little bit brown, they would have brought out their tasers and their guns, mark my words, in this 9/11 world.
I mean, to be fair, this is Heathrow Airport and not an LA airport or something. But you're right. I mean, it is.
UK was a place that like gunned down a guy because he was vaguely brown. So I'm just saying.
It happened before.
So this is, white privilege in action. Sam was like, oh, they fly out tonight, though. My drumming didn't work. And he's like, maybe you should confess it. And I was just like, this should have happened weeks ago.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't defend this point, but we wouldn't have the airport scene without it. So
I think this movie likes big romantic gestures.
Yes, that is sort of one of its, I guess, selling points of it, that, you know, love is grand. So you need to be grand to match it. I don't think every single storyline has this, but certainly a lot of storylines do have some sort of like yeah, a romantic gesture to signal how much you love someone.
To yes. me, it's not love, actually.
Well, if we're talking about love, as in it's just a schoolboy romance, well, that isn't that, is that not love? Is not not what the point he was trying to make to his dad?
It was love, actually, but I feel like the dad should have taught him better.
I think it's love, actually, from the dad's perspective. So is this love for your stepson? It absolutely is.
That's true.
Yeah. So it is a love, actually, and maybe not in the way that we're meant to see it, which is the little boy's perspective. Like maybe it's a crush, actually, but is it love from the dad's perspective? Yeah, absolutely.
But is it love for the dad to teach his son healthy relationships in the future? Maybe not.
I think dad's learning.
Okay. Well, I hope the best for Daniel. And to be honest, at the end of the airport, like Carol's like, hey, I saw you on the drums. Like you were cool. Mm-hmm. Like she acknowledges him.
Yeah.
So maybe there's something. Yeah.
There is something. He's not, you know, would he be so invested if he wasn't? I'm not sure.
She didn't even know his name. Okay. Next story is a contentious one. Harry, Karen, and Mia. This is Alan Rickman, Emma Thompson, and whoever plays Mia. I don't know.
Oh, yes, yes. So this is actually, I think, one of the sadder storylines.
It's so sad.
Yeah. It's one of those ones where we talk about like love and not everything being straightforward and pleasant. This is definitely one of them. So Alan Rickman plays a big boss at a company. Who knows what they do? I don't know. Some office, some nice office. Mia is his assistant, and Emma Thompson plays his wife, and they have like two kids.
Yeah.
Two kids together. And I guess like one of the lines from this that we introduced to Emma Thompson is her talking to her daughter being like, I got a role in the nativity play. And then she's like, great, what are you playing? And she's like, oh, I'm the lobster. She's like, the lobster? Like the first lobster.
She's like, there's more than one lobster?
At the birth of Jesus Christ. And the daughter's like, you know, duh. But yeah, so you see, you're introduced to Emma Thompson, and she's like the sweetest lady. She is a loving mom of two children, and she's also the sister of Liam Neeson's character, and is like helping him throughout his mourning period. Kind of in a, I think there are a few comments that she makes. Yeah, like she understands it's a very sad thing, but she's also got a lot going on in her life. So she's also trying to hurry him up in his mourning period.
Like, come on. I got things to do.
Yeah, snap out of it. We've all got lives to live and stuff. Like, yeah, like you can be sad, but also chop chop. So I think like from her perspective, we all really like her, especially because it's played by Emma Thompson, who's another show that we all really like as well. So she's very sweet. There's nothing wrong with this particular story at the moment. But then we see Alan Rickman. He's kind of big boss. He kind of has eyes for Mia, the new intern. And at first you're like, it's fine. He just finds her attractive. But I think we start to see that he's like, you know, slowly being enticed.
Mm.
And Mia also tries to entice him, or tries to seduce him, I guess is probably the right word. Like she's also attracted to him. And so she's trying to get something from him as well. And he does start to fall for it. Not fall for it. That sounds like she's just tricked him or something. It's his own doing, really. Mm. That, he
like participates in it. So he actively is a participant in it, and she's like doing weird leg spread stuff in the office. Like, girl,
yeah,
what are you doing?
She's a brave girl. We see them slowly kind of, you know, edging on an affair, I guess. It's definitely a lot of flirtation going on, and he ends up buying her a really expensive gift for Christmas, whereas he only gets his wife like a CD basically. And because she already, so the wife starts to suspect that he is falling for this intern, or is, you know, playing with the idea of it. And then she kind of has to sit back and accept it in a way.
Yeah. Well, like there's a Christmas party and he like dances it with her, but with Mia very intimately. And his wife is like right there. And you're just like, oh, like now he's just being very open about it in front of everyone. And also no one else is in a costume, but Mia's in red devil horns at that Christmas party. I'm like, why?
I think they call it peacocking. So she kind of is noticing she's not stupid, basically. She knows what's going on. So basically she knows that he's bought an expensive gift, and she's like praying that it's for her. When she finds out
it's for her,
when she finds out that it's not actually for her, I think she is this, we see a scene of her playing the CD that she received for Christmas and then having a little cry in the bedroom, and you're just, your heart just breaks for her because she knows absolutely what's going on, but there's not much, well, there's not much she can do. They've got like two kids together. They actually do have like a pretty solid marriage, I would say. Like, he does respect her, but in saying that, he has, you know,
cheated on her.
Cheating. It's like emotional cheating, even though there's no physical contact, I would say. There's definitely something going on the side.
Yeah.
He would probably deny, I think, because it's not your traditional cheating, but yeah. So you just, your heart just goes out for her because you're like, she just seems like the sweetest person. You kind of want like the best for her, of course, but also husband. It's a sad story.
Yeah, this one's actually really sad. And Emma Thompson does such a good job because, yeah, that moment where she opens the present because it's the same rectangular box and she thinks it's going to be a necklace and seeing it's a CD. Just like the way she holds herself together because the kids are there. They're like unwrapping gifts for Christmas. She like holds herself together and just excuses herself and goes to the room and breaks down a bit. And then seeing her like, okay, I'm okay now, and going to the kids and be like, oh, let's go to the school play. It's so heartbreaking. She does such an amazing job. Yeah, just watching her break apart but hold it together for her kids. And yeah, you're like, fuck you, Alan Rickman. How dare you do this to this woman?
Exactly, because this woman seems like, by all means, like, very good.
Yeah.
How would you do that? Something, do something so awful to her?
But this scene, that scene as well of him buying the necklace is, I think, very famous from Love Actually because it features Rowan Atkinson and it's a very comedic scene.
There are so many comedic scenes in this movie. So like even when we have like sad stories, we just have this like comedic timing that's constantly throughout it. So yeah, the potpourri in the gift wrapping of the necklace, you know, he's taking ages and you can tell Alan Rickman's very stressed at this moment because he actually just tried to buy a quick gift for his mistress, basically, and he wants it to be quick sticks because, you know,
it's the wife's got to come back.
He's not meant to be doing this, of course. And then Rowan Atkinson's like kind of taking his sweet time and like, you know, wrapping things up, putting a few more flowers into the gift wrap.
He tries to put a cinnamon stick in.
You know what? It's excellent service, I have to say.
And then he brings out this huge, like, shoebox size thing. He's like, I need to put the necklace box into this box for the gift wrap. And Alan Rickman is just, like, tearing his hair out of his head.
Well, maybe he shouldn't be doing anything dodgy.
This was a sign. Maybe he shouldn't have bought that at all. It was a sign from the god telling him, don't do this. Like, just step, like, it's not too late. Step away. You can end this. Yeah.
It's a funny scene in a very sad story.
And then, yeah, after the school play concert thing, Karen like drops the truth and she tells him, I know what's happening. And yeah, it's very heartbreaking. She does an amazing job. So is this Love Actually?
How are we rating this one? Is it love?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, does it portray a kind of love or is it like, I mean, I would say there's love.
I mean, there's, I guess, love. For Karen, it hurt so much because she did love him.
Yes.
Right? Like, it was very genuine. Right. She thought it was a family. That they were in their home they were building together. So, yeah. And he had to go and throw it all away.
I mean, by all means. Yeah. By all means, he does seem to, like, respect her and love her in a way, just not in the same way that she would hope for. So, is it love?
I guess so. Sadly. Guess,
sadly.
Sad emoji. Fuck you, Harry.
Yeah.
You're the worst. But you know who else might be the worst? This next story, which is Colin, Tony, and the American Girls.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I wrote this as the worst one for me.
Yeah, this is not Love Actually. I will just say it right here.
This is one that has aged really badly. So basically Colin, he's like, I'm going to go to America. Oh, he's unlucky in love. He's kind of seen as a bit of a loser as well. No one seems to really respect him or like him, except for his best friend. But sometimes that's all you need, right? Like,
but I think part of the reason is that he's a massive creep as well. So in the first scene, he's like handing out food and he's like, do you want to try my nuts? And he's just a creep. And he sees the issue as girls in England don't like me because they're so stuck up. Like, they just like, don't get me. But in America, I would be fucking pulling. Like, I would be slaying the girls in America is his point of view.
I think he's unintentionally a creep. And he also is very unlikable. Like, he works a catering job at a wedding and he talks to someone and is like, oh, these these canapes are disgusting. They're so bad. They taste like awful. And he's obviously speaking to the caterer when he finds that out, like much later in the conversation. But I think he just like lacks social cues, I think. And that's sort of part of, yeah, you're right. He just like puts that down to being like ugly. And it's like, oh, it's much deeper than that, boy. Like,
maybe your personality.
Yeah, maybe your personality needs a little refresh. Yeah. Too. But yeah, basically, it's like, oh, I'm only going to be this number in England, but in America, I would be like a 10 out of 10 because I'm British. I'm automatically put on a pedestal. And I think he, unfortunately, maybe for us, does find that that is true when he goes to America and I guess pulls very hot girls. One of them is Betty from Mad Men.
The January Jones.
January Jones, who we all know. Yeah. Like 10 out of 10.
Yeah, so he's like the self-proclaimed god of sex and he goes to America. Like he like full gets obsessed with this idea that in America he would just slay. And then he goes to America with like a full, you know, backpackers have those huge backpacks and they're the size of their body. And he's like, there's no clothes in here. It's just condoms. So he has a plan and he like full goes with it, buys a ticket to America and flies there. And I feel like the storyline would be satisfying if he just got rejected because he's a creep. But instead he is sadly very successful.
I think that's the worst bit, that he actually is successful and proves everyone wrong. Oh, proves himself right and everyone wrong. Sorry. That's the worst bit to me. And I think it's very like, I mean, this whole movie, I think there is some surrealism to it. Like obviously a lot of these things are amplified. It's a rom-com. It's a drama, like whatever. But I think we have enough realism and reality kind of ingrained into the stories that there is something to kind of pull from it, even if it's not something that would regularly happen. I think in this particular story there is absolutely no realism at all. Like, in what world would this man pull January Jones? Not only January
and three
Jones,
other girls,
that's what I'm saying, like not just this but also three other girls. How did he pull four girls at one time just by having an English accent? Like, that to me seems absurd. And I'm sure it'd be a very, very rare case if that ever happened. Because by all means, it's not just like his looks. He just doesn't seem like a very interesting person as well.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's like, I would agree. It seems like this departure from the rest of the movie. It's like weirdly a fantasy where he goes to America and like these blonde bombshells are just at a bar waiting, doing nothing, and as soon as they hear their accent, they're like, oh my god. And they played as like very bimbo-y types, I think, and they're like, oh my god, like, why don't you come sleep in our house? But the problem is we're so poor, there's only one bed and we can't afford pajamas, so we all have to sleep together naked and sweaty, like, is that okay? And he like, fuck yeah.
Obviously for him it's okay, but you're right, it just seems too good to be true, I think, as well. And then they're all like, oh, but wait till he sees this girl. She's even better.
So she's like, the sexy one.
How is this, like, even realistic at any point of view? Like, this is just 100% him being like, I am the god of sex. I'm going to have all this when I go to America. And then he gets it. I'm like, that's not real.
Yeah. No, his bad behavior is rewarded, which I don't like. And also at the end, he comes back to the UK and brings Harriet, the sexy one, with him. Mm-hmm. And then he's also like, oh, I bought her sister a song as well for his best friend. Like, he just like brought him a chick from America.
Yeah, like, what?
Yeah, I don't like this story. It's a bit gross.
It's very weird. And yeah, again, it has aged very, very badly. I would leave it.
Yeah, this is not Love Actually.
This is problematic, actually.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. But on a more pleasant note, this is actually my favorite story, John and Judy, the movie stand-ins.
Love this movie. Oh, sorry, love this story. As I said before, this is the scene that shocked me as a child. But now when I watch it, I'm like, I love this. Like, this is genuinely one of the best storylines in this movie. And it's a really small one. It's actually one of the shortest ones. They don't get a huge amount of airtime, but I think they don't need to because it's just straight from the get-go. Like, it's very... So basically, they are two actors and they are going to be starring in a porn film, I would think. So they are like practicing the actions. They are fully clothed and everything.
Sometimes.
Well, they start off. And then as the, I guess, process of the filming goes on, the director's like, you know, please take off your top, that kind of thing, you know, put your hand on her breast. And then Martin Freeman, who's playing the guy in this situation, he's very like respectful of the actor and is like, oh, do you mind if I do this? Even though it's, you know, part of the description of the job. I think it's also just juxtaposed with the nature of the job, which is very sexual. Of course, it's pretty much a porn film or maybe a sex scene.
I think it might be a sex scene and they're the stand-ins so they can get the lighting right or whatever. But yeah, like he's very gentle and he's like warming up his hands before he puts them on her boob so he doesn't shock her.
Yeah, and like, you know, he fully was like, I'm going to do this. And she's like, yeah, that's fine. You know, throughout this whole process, it's just been nothing but a gentleman. And then throughout this whole thing, they're also like genuinely having conversations. They're not, you know, just talking about work. They are talking about like, you know, their travel and like their hobbies and things like that. And you're like, oh, these people actually have a genuine connection outside of this, you know, outside of like a sexual nature. It's like a genuine human connection.
Yeah. And I think it's, yeah, like you said, the juxtaposition, because he's just like behind her doing mild thrusting. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a very funny scene to see them do that while they just be like, oh, like, how was the freeway today? Oh, there's a lot of traffic and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's really cute. And I would say that compared to a lot of the other stories where couples don't talk, like you don't see, I don't know, I think there's not a lot of like build up to the relationship. At least for this storyline, you see them talking and establishing similar interests and stuff and him asking her out. So you're like, oh, actually, maybe there's like, this is why they like each other and why they get along.
Yeah, like because they do understand each other, even from like a professional level. And that's why I think it's like pretty short, because it's pretty like, well, we see it. There's connection. They're talking, you know, there's not much to it. It is sort of play for comedic effect as well, which is quite like, keeps that in like this story particularly interesting. You know, there's not much to say. It's just like, yeah, it's just two people who like each other.
Yeah. It's Love Actually.
Just happened to be acting in a scene that is sexual. But anyway, yes, I agree. It is Love Actually.
So this is my favorite one. Big tick from me.
Yes, my favorite too.
This is one of my least favorite ones. Juliet, Peter and Mark. So Juliet is Keira Knightley getting married to her friend Peter. And Mark is the best friend. The best man.
What I will say about this one is I love the wedding when they do the trumpets and it's kind of like a flash mob, I guess, in a wedding. Mm. They stand up and people do start playing the trumpets and stuff to Love by the Beatles. I think this whole movie, there is a pretty good music score. I do like the music in this. And in this particular scene, I think that this particular song sounds really, really good. So I like.
Yeah, it's a music. Cute scene.
Yeah, I like the music. Also, the friendship between the best friend and what's his name? The Walking
Peter
Dead.
Peter and Mark.
Peter and Mark.
Yeah.
Yeah, the friendship between Peter and Mark does seem genuine. They seem like really good friends. We don't really know much about Juliet at this point, except that she's just getting married to the friends and he genuinely seems like he's in love. She's in love. They're both very happy. It's a happy occasion. They're happy to be married.
I'm glad. Thank God.
Glad we've got that. But, however. But. We have, what's his name again? I keep forgetting.
Mark.
So Mark, we do find out. So a lady comes up to him and is like, are you in love with your best friend? And he's like, no. But we do find out he is in love with his best friend's now wife.
Mm.
How he got to the stage of love, unknown. To
we
be
don't
honest.
Know.
We don't know. We never see them really interact.
Yeah.
I would say from what I can tell, I think it's just a huge crush.
Yeah.
Or lust, maybe. What else could it be?
But it's enough that like he's filming the wedding and the reception on his like camcorder and all he does is zoom into Juliet's face. Just constant zooms.
I mean, if we are to step back a bit and say, okay, he's attracted to his best friend's wife and he's trying to draw a line somewhere, like I can respect that. I think where I don't respect is him filming her. His like own surely. Private use.
Exactly. I was like, yeah, he's just like zooming into her face and I'm like, what are you gonna do with this? Exactly. Like, what's I'm scared what you're gonna do with
this. The only reason why we find this out is because Juliet comes to his house and she's just like, hey, my videographer for my wedding stuffed something up. I have really bad videos of my wedding. I would like to see a good video. She noticed he was filming everything. It's a fair request.
Very fair.
Yeah, the best friends with her husband. Again, who else would she go to? And he's like really reluctant to show her, of course, because he creepily like filmed her the whole time. Mm. And then eventually she finds it and then plays it. And it's just all images of her. And you can see her face just like, you know, at first being very happy to see like a good image of her, but then slowly it falls a little bit when she realized it's just her, and she's just like probably thinking, this is really weird. It's a little
bit gonna kill me. Am I making it back home tonight?
And she's obviously quite confused as well.
And she's wearing a very outdated now denim hat. And her face is just like, eh?
So apparently this hat she wore because she had a pimple.
Really?
Yes.
Well, it definitely took the attention away from that.
But it's like, maybe she should have just shown the pimple.
It would have been better. It would have aged better.
I think so.
It's a very distracting hat. I have to say.
Very. I think there's so many close-up shots of her face that you see a lot of hat.
You're just like, why is this hat taking up so much room?
And yeah, so I guess like from this, he doesn't really say it, but I think it's sort of understood.
It's so obvious, yeah.
That he has a crush on her. And then when she leaves, he starts to go after her to explain, but I think he like retracts that and is just like, no. This is, I shouldn't.
I read that he has his main character moment to Dido because he's like walking along the street and like yelling, of like, oh, like, how could I have done this? And Dido's playing, I don't know. Do, 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 do. Anyway, it's very dramatic. But yeah, he should have deleted that footage is what I'm going to say. Like, he should have not bad enough that he footage. Did it. Yeah, it's bad enough that he did it. But like after he got home from the wedding, immediately delete. Like, what's he going to do with it?
That's the thing. What's he going to do with it? And now that she's found out, surely this is the time where he's just like, this is the end. This is the end for me. Like, all this not. Journey is over because by all means, he understands that it's something he shouldn't cross over into because, you know, that's his best friend. He like understands the boundaries, but at the same time doesn't.
Or like keeps acting on things that he knows he shouldn't do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes. But anyway, here we have the scene that I think encapsulates Love Actually in people's memories and has been memed to death and parodied, which is the scene where Mark goes to the house that Juliet shares with Peter and knocks on the door. And then when she opens it, he's like, shh, like tell him it's carol singers. And then he does the whole sign scene where he's like confessing his love without, to give him, I guess, credit, he says without hope or agenda. And then he confesses his love because when it's Christmas, that's what you're supposed to do or something, allegedly. And he has this whole like, to me, you are perfect confession scene. And he's just like throwing out cardboard signs.
So this is a scene I think a lot of people, yeah, as you say, it's memorable. Actually, in Love Hard, which we talked about last week, Natalie, the Nina Dobrev character, does the exact same thing because this is, Love Actually is one of Josh Lynn's favorite movies. So yeah, again, it's a reference that we all understand now, like it's sort of surpassed the movie almost, like we all understand this reference, but not everyone has seen the movie.
It's definitely an iconic scene.
It's a weird one because, as you said before, like it's weird that he is in love with his best friend's wife, and it's weird that he has done this.
Would you say, is this a dick move?
There are two readings into this. One of them is he should know his place. You know, rocking up to your best friend's place to confess to his wife that you love her. Not ideal.
Yeah.
And probably not the most respectful, I would say, to do it. The other way to look at it, I guess, is that this is the final scene for him. Like, he just does this and then moves on with his life. He just has to get it out of his system. Realize it's a shitty situation and that sometimes your love is not reciprocated. This is just the, I guess I'm going to call it the grand gesture to like end it and give him like closure that he has like done all he can to sort of get it out of his system. I think the thing for me is maybe this scene would have worked better if we understood why he liked Juliet, because we never really see him really interact with her. We all just like, his story starts off with him being like, for some reason, he really loves his best friend's wife. Who knows why? Because I think when she talks to him, she thinks that he hates her. Because he never talks to her. He ignores her.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, actually, they don't really have a relationship. He's just genuinely just maybe loves her through his best friend. Like maybe his best friend has talked about her and then he's like liked all these things about her. So it's not really her, is it? It's like the idea of her. And maybe it's also just like physical attraction or lust or whatever we want to call it in combination with the idea of her. It's not actually her because he doesn't know her.
He just loves her great taste in hats.
Potentially.
Yes.
Something for everyone.
Something for everyone. Yeah, I guess so. I guess if you've seen the history or like the characters are developed a bit more, you can understand why he's doing this. But because you don't, you're just like, I think you kind of get frustrated with him. You're like, just get over it. Why do you have to do this? Like, your best friend is in that house. And imagine he just like came out, was like, oh, Carol Singles, I want to see. And like came to the door. What would you do?
Well, that's the thing. I think this is like, definitely not the most respectable way of doing it, because it is, again, he understands the boundaries and the lines, but he crosses them
for
his own selfish needs, which I think from a human perspective, I can understand. But also, like, would you ever do that to your friend? Like, you probably wouldn't, because you just, especially with like your best friend, supposedly.
Yeah.
You
would just be like, okay, like, I need to get over it. Like,
yeah, you sort of just like weigh it up. Whereas he chose himself. It was a selfish act, I have to say that. I don't know. We're all human. Maybe that's the story here. They're all just human. It's not something to kind of aspire to. I think the reason why people maybe don't like the scene as well is because it's sort of seen as something that's like really romantic, and everyone talks about it as like, oh, it's super cute that he did that. But like, I don't know if it's cute. I would just say it's just, I don't know, someone just doing something for themselves.
I think that's the issue. Like, it's been interpreted as a very romantic, grand, cute gesture. And I think it's made worse by the fact that after he does it and he walks away with all these like huge placards, she runs after him and gives him like a kiss. So it's not necessarily like romantic. You kind of get the sense that she's like, okay, well, thanks, but bye. Like, this is it.
Yeah.
A kiss. But it feels like a reward for his bad behavior.
I think so too. Yeah.
Whereas I would have been like, what the fuck?
Me too. I think it's
inside. Peter, do you know what your best friend just did to me?
I think also it's just like an unspoken thing as well, that she understands that he can't actually say this in front of his best friend, of course.
Yeah. Oh, darn. Yeah.
But in saying that, it's also like, well, if he shouldn't have said in front of his best friend, maybe he shouldn't have said it at all. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. The kiss isn't romantic. It's just more like a, I feel bad for you. I get
sorry, bro.
Like, I see where you're coming from, and I respect that you like came out and said this to me. But however, I don't reciprocate. That's sort of like what the kiss is saying.
Do you think Juliet went inside and ever told Peter?
Definitely not.
Starting off their marriage with secrets.
Sure, he took that to a grave. She's like, it's not worth it. It's not worth it.
Well, yeah, it would ruin the friendship.
In the friendship, in the marriage, it's not worth it. I think also is that understanding that this is the final chapter in that sort of thing, where it's like, okay, this happened. Let's all, now we can all get over it. I
goddamn hope so. Like, surely if you can't get over it after that gesture,
you have a lot of learning.
That's
to
your
do.
Best friend.
Like at some point, you also have to be an adult and be like, we weigh up your things, weigh up your life options and stuff. But that's. Is that love?
It's selfish, actually.
it is a love, but I don't know if it's love. You know? Maybe if I look at the wedding, that's love.
Yeah, okay, that's love,
There is a love, but it's not
everything else. Don't do that. Don't do that. Anyone who has unrequited love, don't do that.
Don't do it. I feel bad for you, but like, also don't do that.
There are better ways of processing your feelings. And just the penultimate story is David and Natalie. I like this story because Hugh Grant is so hot.
All right. Let's talk about Hugh Grant for a moment. Hugh Grant has been in some of my favorite rom-com movies like
this
ever.
Man.
I think it's weird because as a person, I look at him and I'm like, not into it. He seems like a bit of a dick. He has like 7 kids and 7 different women or something.
Yeah.
Kind of seems like a player. Well, doesn't seem like a player. Probably he is. Right.
Yeah.
However, rom-coms, in his peak, especially when I'm talking about Notting Hill, I'm talking about Pretty Woman. Not Pretty Woman. In Notting Hill. Sorry, Notting Hill. He always plays like kind of bumbling idiot, very lovable character. This is the mature version of this. So he's not an idiot because he's the prime minister.
He's literally the prime minister, yes.
He is kind of bumbling, like he's very like charming in a very like boyish way, I would say. Mm-hmm. Sort of his charm, that he is just like, a regular boy who just found himself on top of the pyramid in parliament. He's super charming as usual in this scene as prime minister. I would totally vote for him because he'd probably say something like semi-reasonable and I'd be like, wow, he's just so charismatic, something like that. I would probably vote for him, to be honest. However, in the context of how we perceive power and power concepts
and
things like that, I would say this has possibly not aged well, especially because we have talked about impeachment and things like that.
I literally wrote that. I'm getting massive Bill Clinton vibes. And not in a good way.
Not in a good way. I would say probably better than Bill Clinton. I think Bill Clinton seems like a very like flirtatious person. I think we're meant to see this person as only flirtatious with Natalie, which is fine, right? Yes. However, we can't ignore the fact that he is president.
Literally the prime minister.
And she is essentially like admin, I think.
Yeah, she like brings in biscuits and documents.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's, yeah, just assistant sort of thing.
And also in the part of the story that really ruins it for me in 2021 is the emphasis on Natalie's looks and specifically body shape.
It is so weird.
It feels really, really dated. I think also because some of it is played for comedy and I'm like, I don't think it's funny. Like, I don't think it was funny then for me personally. Don't think it's still not funny now. I talk about like thunder thighs and things like that. I'm like, yikes, like that's not it for me.
I think this story, it's very charming when you look at Hugh Grant's performance because mm-hmm. he's really good at it and you just fall for him. I just sent you a picture of young Hugh Grant. Like, look into those eyes. Like, you just can't help falling for him.
You don't have to remind me what young Hugh Grant looks like.
It's imprinted in our brains. But then, yeah, there's so many. And then he does that whole, like, dancing scene. Like, you love him. We love Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
The character that he plays.
It's very easy to see why he's in that position. People really like him. Why Natalie likes him. Like,
yeah.
He's just an all-round guy. Like, he's good-looking, he's charming, whatever.
But there's so many aspects of the story that don't work. Mm. So, yeah, like you said, the fact that she's the power dynamic, like she's an assistant, he's the prime minister. The fat jokes are so weird in this one. Like, they're just constantly mentioned. I don't know. I feel like you're kind of seeing, they try to set him up as the only person who doesn't make mention of her weight or like put her down for it or anything. But everyone calls her chubby, and also like one of his aides is like, oh, did you see her? She has a sizable ass and huge thighs. And I'm like, how is this appropriate in a work context? And he's just like, he doesn't say anything like, you shouldn't say that. He's just like, yes. And then when she goes home, she's called fat. Like, she's called fat by all these people. And it's like, what is this obsession?
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe a product of its time in terms of that, but I think one that for me personally, never on board with anyway. Yeah, it feels even worse now. Yeah, we are supposed to see that he doesn't really care about all that sort of stuff, like what people are talking about. And he just is attracted to her anyway.
Mm.
The other thing, he finds her quite charming. And she is. She's like, I guess, a regular girl, to be honest.
Mm. And she like swears a lot, like she can't help herself. So you kind of see that she's very charming and why they have a connection as well.
She's real.
Yeah, she's so real. And he's like the real prime minister. He's very human, yeah. He's not stuffy old politician.
No, he's quite a young prime minister, I think, is the other thing. I think, again, that's another reason why we might forgive him, because he is younger rather than like a 60-year-old man, like a 20-year-old girl, something like that. We give him a little bit of leeway, I think.
Another part of this story is like this weird bit with the US president who comes, who's played by Billy Bob Thornton. He's like very like, oh, standing up for the US and not budging on important negotiations between the two countries. And then he acts inappropriately towards Natalie. The prime minister sees that. And then after that, he has a press conference where they're supposed to say, oh, we're working together, we're cooperating. But he uses that opportunity, and based on it, you know, seeing the way he treated Natalie, uses that opportunity to publicly shit on the US president. And he has this whole like weird, he takes a stand and he's like, we're a small country, but a great one. And names all these incredible things that came out of the UK, like Shakespeare and Harry Potter. And he's just like, I don't know, some like weird delusional British thinking, like standing up to the US. And I think this speech actually like resonated in the UK. And I've seen politicians make references to it, and people wanting the UK to have their big moment where they're like, you know, we used to be an empire too. We're powerful. We're not going to be pushed around by the US.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably this sort of delusional thinking that led to Brexit. But that's just my thought on that.
Isn't that what a lot of countries could wish they could do? Like,
but it's just funny. It's like UK.
Yeah.
There are many countries who rightfully should say that, but maybe not the UK, who should be hearing that from other countries.
Maybe.
And we should dissolve the Commonwealth, and Australia should become a republic.
What about Queen Lizzie?
Fuck her.
Or how about the Commonwealth Games?
We can have games, but like, she doesn't have to be our queen anymore.
I mean, not that she has much influence.
I don't want to be under the reign of King Charles. I refuse to be a constituent of his monarchy.
Well, I refuse to believe that he'll ever be King Charles.
We can only hope.
Not looking likely, is it? Every day he gets older, but Queen Lizzie stays the same.
She's immortal.
She's immortal.
She cannot be killed.
She's found a technology to make her live.
She's siphoning his youth somehow. Well,
yeah, maybe. She's probably like brushing his hair every day and feeding on his youth.
Flower, gleam and glow.
That's exactly what I'm thinking of.
I have a TikTok about that I should send you. Anyway. Basically, the PM and Natalie get together, really, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
they have this moment where she leaves him a nice Christmas card and she's like, actually, I'm yours or something. Like, she confesses her feelings and he's like, oh my God, like, I can't let this go. So then he goes like door knocking. Mm-hmm. And at first I'm like, surely someone in the office has an employee's home address. But anyway, he goes around looking for her.
I think it's the thing you were saying before, like, you know, this movie really ramps up like the romantic gestures. Mm. Like, yeah, he puts in so much effort, even though he is the prime minister and could literally just ask for the records. I feel like that's not illegal if you're the prime minister.
I'm sure there's a database
to get a home
security agencies. Exactly.
I'm sure he could get by that very easily. But yes, he door knocks on every single person's door. I think there's a conversation previously where she kind of gives him a very vague address as well. Like, I live here, but like on the dodgy end or something. So he goes to that part of town and knocks on everyone's doors. And then obviously, because everyone recognizes him. And he has to go through so much. And it just plays for comedic effects. So everyone, like, you know, obviously they're in shock when they see the prime minister at their door, or they think he's a caroler or make him sing and all sorts of stuff happening.
Yeah. Imagine you saw Scott Morrison at your door.
Well, I'd probably close it.
No, thank you.
Not today, sir. I'm busy. But yeah, it was pretty great. I might act differently.
Come in. Well, can I get you coffee, tea, water? I have juice.
So, the grand gestures. He eventually finds her. And then they go to the school play together. Of course.
All the stories converge on this school play with lobsters at Jesus's birth.
Yes, of course. Not one lobster, but two lobsters at Jesus's birth. And yeah, he basically finds himself backstage with Stanley and they share a little kissy kiss. And then the stage falls and everyone can see them in this like little public school, a very small public school, like suddenly see the prime minister in the middle of the stage. Like, of course, there's going to be a lot of media attention on this. But anyway, it's fine because it's love.
It's love, actually. I think this story is cute by coasting off Hugh Grant. And whoever plays Natalie is very charming and loving and lovely as well. But many issues.
Yeah, it doesn't come without a price.
So is this love actually? I guess, I mean, you didn't see that they like each other, but like, you shouldn't be dating your assistant.
I feel like there should be more barriers to that. Not that you can't do that, but like, you know, maybe it should be more appropriate. I don't know how you'd make that more appropriate. Yes, it is love.
I guess so. And yes, now we're ending on a bit of a sadder note. The last story. Sarah, Carl, and Michael.
This one. I feel like we get so much tragedy in this rom-com. In this one, we have Sarah, who is deeply in love with a very hot Carl.
He has perfect hair, and he looks like he should be on the front cover of, like, romance novels.
He looks
Don't you think?
Yeah, he looks like a sexy nerd. Like, he's got the fancy skin, he's got dark, swept hair,
and the glasses
which he would definitely take off.
He would just whip him off along with his shirt.
Yeah, you know, like, office by day and suaves, I don't know, whatever, by night. Anyway, so she's, like, deeply in love with this guy. Everyone knows it. I think it's sort of, like, part of the joke as well that she has loved him since day one, and it's been, like, years.
And she hasn't confessed or anything.
She hasn't confessed, but everyone knows. I'm guessing Carl also knows as well. I don't know why he wouldn't. And she, I guess, the build-up of her storyline is that she gets a lot of calls as well, and she always picks them up. She always, like, speaks to them, even when she's clearly busy. She says she's not busy. So we're all like, who is this person that she's talking to? Why did she devote so much time and energy into this relationship when clearly she has other things going, I guess, is probably where we're supposed to be seeing it. And then we do find out that she actually has a brother, and he's in hospital. So is he disabled? It's kind of unclear. Well, I don't can't remember exactly why he's in there, but basically
he just needs like care. So he's in a facility, or he stays there he lives there essentially.
Yeah. Like, he needs constant supervision. And when she meets up with him, there needs to be supervision, even when it's just her. She talks to him very lovingly, devotes all his time, all her time to him, and always ready to pick up a call. Night, she's just like, I'm gonna go for it. Go for the
call. They dance at the Christmas party, and then she's like, do you wanna come over? And he's like, yeah, okay, come over. We'll just hang. And then he goes to her place. And then they decide to get it on. And she's very pleased. She's very happy.
Of course. Like, this is all she's wanted. She's like deep feelings for this person. It's kind of unclear because if I was Carl, I 100% know what I'm getting into by going home with her or dancing with her, right? Because everyone and even the boss knows that she has a big crush on him. So he understands what he's going through. Does he reciprocate? It's kind of hard to tell from his perspective.
Yeah, you don't really know if he has any genuine feelings for her or if he's just like, this would be a...
It's hard to tell, but I would like to think that if he didn't... Sorry, I would like to think that he does because he does understand the history, I think, from her perspective. If he did this with no genuine feelings, then he's just an asshole, right? Like, he's just taking advantage of a woman who is vulnerable or who has feelings that are quite deep, and he can take advantage of that. So I think in a way, like, he does sort of, like, doesn't mind. And he is very respectful to her in saying that. I think this is where the tragedy is. He doesn't quite understand her relationship with her brother, which I guess it's kind of hard to ask that of someone that you don't really, really know on that level.
To understand
that relationship, because it is a difficult one. You can see from her perspective, like, she obviously loves him. She obviously loves her brother, puts a lot of care into it. Is it hard? Of course it is. Like, you know.
Yeah.
He definitely shows that too, that it is really difficult to love your brother, take care of your brother, but she's also happy to do it at the same time.
It's like this weird situation where you don't fully see Carl's perspective, like you said, so you don't really know what's going on on in his head. So, yeah, when they're like... They get interrupted as they're getting physical. And I think he sort of responds like in terms of his facial expression where she's like, no, I'm not busy. From his perspective, he's like, yeah, you are. Like, we're supposed to be doing this. And he suggests like, don't pick up the phone. But she does because she has to. It's her brother. So, yeah, I guess it's, you don't really understand why it breaks down, but maybe just he wasn't ready for that level of commitment with this additional sort of element to the relationship. So it's sad. It just like ends with them not getting together.
Yeah, even though it's like the intent is like that she just genuinely really, really has feelings for this person. Like it's not just like I saw him and he was good looking. It's like genuinely like there is affection from her side, and that's something that she's willing to forego for her brother.
And it's sad. You just kind of wish that in the future she was able to balance like her own needs with her caretaker needs.
Yeah.
Even if it's not with Carl, with a hotter guy than Carl.
Is there a hotter guy? I think like also from your perspective, you understand why Carl does what he does, because there is no previous, like, they're in a relationship or anything. Mm-hmm. Like, this is strictly, even though she really, really likes him, it's pretty clear that this intention of this particular event is like physical. Mm-hmm. There is that understanding of it. What it goes on from here, like, or from there, I don't know. But the intention is there. So, I mean, he didn't sign up for anything. He also doesn't understand, because I don't think that he would have talked to her a lot, maybe. He doesn't understand, the nature of the relationship. There's no way that he would know, basically.
Yeah.
So the fact that
he's just like, I came over to have fun. And now when not, it's just like, what am I here for?
Well, yeah, that too. So you can totally understand why he would leave. I think most people would in that particular situation.
Well, it's sad and you wish he wouldn't, but I feel like it's realistic.
Yes.
Which is sad. Yes. You'd rather people are a bit more understanding. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. But then it's also like, I understand why he doesn't understand. I think, it's kind of one of those ones where you're like, you wish that potentially in the future, if he genuinely like wants to commit, like he would, be able to understand where she needs to actually pick up the phone versus maybe when she doesn't. Yeah.
Sad
note. Is it love? It is very much love.
It's familial love, I guess, actually. And it ends with like another airport scene. Does it kind of like suggest that Harry is still with Karen? Like they haven't divorced or anything like that?
To me, it doesn't seem like they have. It doesn't seem like maybe he understands the hurt he's caused her as well, but what that results in, not sure. But there's definitely like, it's never like he never loved her. He definitely did. It's just people stray. It's not unusual, maybe, but there is definitely something that's anchoring them together. That's not to say that she's not hurt. So that's a we need to figure that out. Or they need to figure that out situation.
But in terms of family, like, yes, they're together. I think they're seen as that.
Yeah, Jamie marries Aurelia. Joanna comes back to the UK. So Sam maybe gets to date her.
His dad meets Claudia Schiffer.
His dad, yes, very importantly, meets Claudia Schiffer. And then John and Judy are married, going on to their honeymoon. And Colin comes back with an extra girl in tow for his best friend. And then I think, yeah, Natalie welcomes the Prime Minister back. Yeah. And is that it? I think that's it.
I think that's it.
Yeah. Happy ending? Question mark. Basically really happy ending except for like Karen. Because she's not like, oh, hey, Harry. She's more just like, hey, Harry, let's go.
Yeah. But I mean, it's love, actually. Not without its challenges. And then the Kelly Clarkson song plays. It's like, yeah, it's really, I don't know, what's the lyrics?
Which one is it?
The trouble with love is.
Oh, okay.
That was a really splendid thing.
Good old Kelly. But yeah, interesting movie. I would say my favorite stories are John and Judy and Billy Mack and Joe, Manager Joe.
Yes. Retrospect. Yes. Those, I would say my favorite as well. This movie, I know you don't vibe with it.
Yes.
I think for me, it has the nostalgic lens on it. Like, I watch it with that. Therefore, I don't see it as badly. Like, obviously, it hasn't aged as well as I would have liked in terms of a lot of storylines. But I think for me, the overall theme of different types of love being kind of balanced and, I don't know, combined, I guess, like the conceptual idea of it.
Yeah. Like,
if we could replace some of these stories with newer ones or, I don't know, better ones, maybe you want to say that. Yeah, it's just like the idea of the movie. I think that's the part for me that I still enjoy, I guess.
Mm.
But again, I don't think I would feel the same if I didn't have the nostalgia for it.
Well, I think when it comes to movies, a lot of it is not just like the plot or what's shown on screen, but how it makes you feel. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so tied up in that. So yeah, I can see why people have a lot of affection towards this movie. And I think it's very watchable. Like, it moves along. It's quite a long movie. It's like over 2 hours, I think. But it moves along and, you know, you keep seeing new people. And it's still, like, edited in a way where you can follow along the different stories and not get confused, which is a feat in itself. So I can see why people like it. I think, for me, the genuine feelings of love and all that are more overshadowed by annoyance at some of the characters.
Yeah, whereas I might forgive some of those characters where I'm like, oh, you're so stupid, but that's fine. Because overall, the movie still evokes those feelings.
Mm.
Especially, like, yeah, at the end and beginning where it kind of, like, encapsulates what the movie is about, like, conceptually, and also through, like, the Heathrow Airport, which to me is a classic scene. I remember when I went to England, I was very disappointed to not go to Heathrow Airport because I think, like, the idea of that airport in general is, like, yeah. I don't know. In the movie, though, it's just an airport. I think it's just, like, what the airport stands for in a lot of movies, and I think in particular this one, but in general, airport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, next time you should fly into Heathrow.
This is the quintessential airport scene. Yeah. I mean,
pay extra.
Yeah, that's the thing I didn't want to do. I'm like, should I pay extra to go to Heathrow Airport for no reason other than I just wanted to say I've been to Heathrow Airport? Probably not.
Why not?
Well, why not? It's because it costs more.
You only live once. It's one of those, like, famous movie airports, I feel like JFK. Like, you always hear about it, and it's in pop culture a lot. But yeah, Love Actually, it's a quintessential Christmas movie, beloved by many. And I don't know, there must be a reason why it's, like, lived on for so long. And, you know, we've mentioned similar movies like Valentine's Day that haven't. So there must be something in this, like, you know, the special sauce, something about it that keeps people coming back for more. Like, it works on some level, right?
It is. I think genuinely, like, as we said before, like, good actors, good timing, good comedic timing, I think helps to really break it up, and good balance as well, even though, you know, we can say, like, not all the stories are great in hindsight, but there is a good balance between them all, and somehow it is cohesive as well, even though we've got so much going on. It doesn't feel like I'm being pulled in too many directions, I would say. There is sort of, like, a timeline of things happening. Yeah, they've kind of done a good job at balancing that whole aspect of the movie, and then really encompassing, like, the idea of it through this romantic and idealistic airport scene. I think even if you just take that one scene by itself, I'm like, yeah, this is it, this is the movie.
Even though airports are, like, not great places to be
at the moment,
I mean, just in general, like, it's annoying.
Oh, right. You're talking about the practicalities of it.
Yeah, yeah. Like going, taking off your shoes and taking your laptop out, and then they get really mad at you for not being quick enough. You're like, I'm sorry, I'm trying.
Yeah, like the practicalities of flying, not great. But the idea of having been on a plane and been somewhere, it's great.
Yeah, well, love that.
Yeah, the idea of coming home from a great trip or something, like that idea is great, rather than, yes, having to go through security and being, you know, waking up 2 hours earlier than you need to.
Yeah.
To get to the airport on time. Yeah, of course, all this stuff sucks. But it's the end result, Frances.
That's true. And yeah, this movie is like by, you know, king of romantic comedies, like Four Weddings and a Funeral, Notting Hill, Bridget Jones's Diary. So
yeah, which actually
Richard Curtis.
I feel like I like all these movies.
But yeah, there we go. Love Actually, we did it. Just an excuse to watch it again. So Alice, what will we be doing next week?
So we are doing Happy Season, starring Kristen Stewart. Came out in 2020, as I'm being told. Yeah, it's on Amazon Prime, sorry.
So if you haven't watched that before, you can do that and listen to our thoughts next week. But until then, thank you for listening and goodbye.
Bye.